Life support is nominal. The oxygen danger indicator level is yellow. Please remember that this is a non-smoking pirate ship.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge. I'm John Breeden, your Chief Lounge Lizard, and your host for this episode of the show. Joining me today are Shella, Marie, and E.T. And in a few seconds, you'll see why. Good old E.T. He, poor guy, you know, great movie, but he did crash the games industry back in 1984. Shella, Marie, welcome to the lounge today.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to be back.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, E.T., the extraterrestrial, the story behind him is that, of course, the Steven Spielberg movie was fantastic, and I think just about every kid watched that movie and thought it was really awesome. I know me and my friend Dan Murphy at the time, we were obsessed with E.T. We had little E.T. spaceships and stuff like that. We were trying to program our speak and spell to be like E.T.'s and everything. But apparently they tried to Atari, which was kind of on the outs at the time anyway, was trying to do a movie tie-in game. So they spent all of 5 weeks putting this E.T. game together. And it came out and it was a huge flop and they made some really bad marketing decisions. Apparently they had to sell like 5 million copies just to pay off Steven Spielberg. And they only sold 3.5 million or something like that. So they ended up being a colossal flop and it really killed the whole game industry. That was the first big crash. And they ended up, the urban legend was that thousands of E.T. the Extraterrestrial games were buried in a landfill in New Mexico. And Shella, what did you find out? You found out that it was true.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was over the weekend they dug them up. So, yeah, the legend is in fact truth.
The funny thing was, I'd heard other people who had gone questing before for that, but I guess it wasn't official or whatever. I heard that Atari put a layer of concrete over top of them so that nobody could, like, you know, go to the landfill, dig them up, and then take them to the video store and be like, how much will you give me for 30,000 copies of E.T. the Extraterrestrial? I would like store credit that I can eventually apply to buying my Xbox
One. Apparently the current Atari team, they were saying, yeah, we don't know anything about this. You know, there's no one in the company now because Atari's been sold and resold so many times. But they were like, yeah, we're watching it with as much interest as everybody else. So it was really well buried.
One of the things in the news story, it said that none of the cartridges came out of the landfill functional, at least the ones that they came out. Which I don't know why, because don't those cartridges last forever? I mean, pretty much. I don't know. Maybe years underground, they've got water seeping into something. Yeah. I don't know, but
if you need more than a pencil eraser to get off what's packed onto them now.
Probably, you know, the game, it wasn't like the game wasn't available. I mean, it did, like I said, it did sell like 3.5 million copies. I think. I used to go to this trade show every year, more of a gathering of like geeks. It was around New Year's Eve and they had a game room and E.T. was in the game room. I mean, people had the game, you know, oh, let's play the worst game ever made, you know. But did either of you get a chance to play it at all when it was out? Marie, did you say you did or you didn't?
A friend of mine had it. I had an Atari 2600 and a friend of mine had the game and loaned it to me.
You actually had it in your possession.
I did. He didn't tell me what he thought of it. He was like, why don't you just play it? And, you know, it was pretty bad because it was pretty repetitive, even for an Atari 2600 game. I think for all the money that could have been spent on it, I mean, it clearly looked like something that had been thrown together in 5 weeks. It didn't push the envelope at all for for graphics or anything. I mean, it was pretty much awful.
It was mostly because I played it, but I didn't actually have it in my possession.
I didn't borrow
it
for very long. I gave it back to him 2 days later.
I mean, my impression when I was playing it wasn't, this is the worst Atari game I've ever played. I mean, there were ones that I liked less. I mean, you know, I thought their miniature golf game was pretty bad.
That was pretty bad.
And stuff. But, you know, it was mostly just like running around with E.T. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing that made it, I think, disappointing, and of course now in this, you know, age that we live in, and we know that TV and movie tie-in games generally suck. You know, back then, because the movie had been such a hit, and because, you know, in your, you know, youthful innocence, you feel like, wow, the movie was great. So surely they spent time and energy and money making the game great. And, so I think the disappointment factor for that game...
Yeah, maybe it's the most disappointing game ever made as opposed to the worst game ever made.
Exactly. That nails it.
Oh, perfect. That's good. So, yeah, let's rename it right now. It's the most disappointing game. That's true, yeah.
They continue to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, constantly. I mean, the show we wanted to talk today, I mean, obviously... The hook is that, you know, they finally found this urban legend that turned out to actually be true. Which, I mean, does that happen?
It's going to be an alligator in the sewers of New York.
Right? Okay. Wow, I hope not.
There's some woman's going to die and they're going to undo her beehive hairdo and it'll be full of spiders or whatever. You know what I mean? So I mean, that was, I kind of got a kick out of that more so than, you know, finding a non-functional copy of the worst or the most disappointing game ever made. I mean, you know, you could have dug around in my friend's basement and probably done the same thing. But yeah, it was interesting. I think, but we wanted to talk a little bit about disappointing games. And, so I started looking up, games that I played that were disappointing. And a couple things come to mind. First off, I think at the end of a console's life, at least it used to be the case. I don't think it was necessarily the case with the last generation console. But back in the day, it seemed like when a console got to the end of its life, then people would be able to, just kind of program games that weren't all that interesting. I don't know. Programmers are get so used to the game, to the gaming system, that they sort of can able to throw things together quickly like that. I mean, I assume the Atari 2600 was fairly easy to program, lest, you know, they couldn't make a game in 5 weeks. So for like my Intellivision, which was my console of choice at the time, there was a game called Tropical Trouble, which was basically a side-scrolling adventure, but it was really played up. But again, when you look at the history of it, it was made by a student in like 5 weeks. And then, you know, Intellivision or Mattel just said, hey, that's really cool. Let's publish this thing and get it out there. And, you know, and that was kind of like when video games started to decline. But I don't think, I don't know. I think even at the most basic level these days, like, you know, you can't have one person program a console. I mean, if you can certainly slapstick stuff together. But it's not one guy doing it. You know, if you're going to slap something together, you still got to get a development team together, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not. Also, you know, the thing is, it's easy to say it was easy to program for the 2600, but it wasn't then. That was, you know, state of the art.
Well, it was state of the art, but you didn't have to worry about voice actors.
You didn't have to worry about it. It didn't take, you know, hundreds of people to put it together.
Right, yeah. You didn't have to go to Iceland and get a barbarian choir to sing for your theme song or anything. So I don't know. I mean, I guess in a sense, those games, I mean, sort of like the casual market, and certainly on the PC, I guess, if you follow, I don't know how much Steam gaming you guys do, but a lot of the indie games on Steam kind of fall into that trap where it's like, you know, some of them are quite good. I'm certainly not saying anything bad about the indie market. I mean, in fact, I think that this is the year that, you know, indie is huge, huger than it's ever been. But that said, there are some games that are fairly obvious that, you know, it was put together by people that didn't really have that much skill. Which, in the terms of like something like, you'll say, Flappy Bird, doesn't seem to be much of a detriment to its popularity. So, I don't know. Generally, I guess we can. I mean, has there ever been a movie tie-in game that's been good? That's been amazing?
Well, yes. Like, for instance, the third Harry Potter game where you could play all three of the characters. That was actually a pretty good game. Now, once again, did I think it was a pretty good game because I expected it to be worse than it was?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a disappointment over E.T.? I mean, is it – I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure there. But I will say that because my nieces were very into Harry Potter and all that, I played, I think, all of the Harry Potter games. And that one was the best one. And it really gave you a lot of options. And so, you know, I feel like sometimes they do it right, but at this point we've been geared to think that they're going to be bad.
Hmm. So. Did somebody say Blade Runner? What was the Blade Runner game? I don't remember that one.
That was like a point and click adventure. It was brilliant. You didn't play the Blade Runner game. Oh, it's great. Like, really atmospheric and, yeah, just Blade Runner-y, which is everything you wanted it to be.
Blade Runner-y. Well, there we go. Was it a direct – were you playing the events that happened in the movie, or were you playing a separate story in the Blade Runner universe?
I don't remember it that well. I think it was a separate investigation. It was a different investigation. But it had, like, the noodle bar. It had all the elements that you wanted. It had rain and neon and alleys.
you're always looking for that noodle bar.
Well, I would also say that, going all the way back, Empire Strikes Back for the Atari 2600 was a good game.
Okay.
You know, it was challenging. It was exciting. The graphics were pretty good. Actually, all the early games coming out of LucasArts that were tied to Star Wars were good. X-Wing was good. Mm. What was the one?
Oh, the whole X-Wing projects, where it was like there was like a whole series of X-Wing games. Where
those were great games, and so was the first-person shooter with the stormtrooper thing. What was that called?
Dark Trooper.
Dark Trooper was great. I mean, those were all tie-ins of a fashion, but they were quality.
Mm. And the Indiana Jones game.
Oh, Indiana Jones and the Lost City of Atlantis?
Yeah, something like
that. That game was fantastic!
Yeah, exactly. We wouldn't have Tomb Raider without that, pretty much.
I love that game. That was a great game.
Yeah, I like
that one. That was one of the ones... well, there was a whole series of the Indiana Jones games where originally they were like... they were, you know, like these almost like side-scrolling adventure games where you'd come up and then, you know, you'd have dialogue choices and stuff and you had to solve puzzles. So it's like a point-and-click adventure and so forth. And then they got into the, you know, on the PlayStation 2 where you were first person, you know, and you had your whip and all that stuff. And that was pretty awesome.
Actually,
so I guess not all,
you know, for TV tie-ins, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer game on PlayStation 2 was great. And the Futurama game was great.
Oh, two I missed.
I did
want to try
the
out
Buffy
that.
One. I remember playing that.
Oh, that was a super fun game. You didn't like the game?
Yeah. No, yeah. No. I did like it. Yeah, I'd forgotten
about that. No, what you said you reviewed it, you were like, oh, I reviewed that.
No. It wasn't with a weary heart.
But yeah, I thought both of those were good.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's cool. So okay, so maybe
done.
Movie time.
it
definitely can. However, I would say that It just depends on how it's done. Like, I was going to bring up one of the worst games I ever played. It was actually a game that was published by Bethesda, and that was Pirates of the Caribbean, The Legend of Jack Sparrow, which was secretly Sea Dogs 2 in disguise. Apparently, the developer, I believe it was Akella, was making Sea Dogs 2, which is sort of like a tactical 3D... ship combat simulation. And Disney got their hands in it and said, oh, guess what? Make this a Pirates of the Caribbean tie-in. So a whole bunch of ridiculous Disney Pirates of the Caribbean references got thrown into that game, which basically made it make no sense. And then a bunch of Disney gamers, you know, people that like the movie, which there were plenty, I'm sure, came to the game expecting that type of experience and ended up, this is like a ship simulation combat with, you know, and then there are like there are, you know, skeletons and pirates walking around for no real reason. And you know, it was just terrible. It was like, it's probably one of the worst things that Bethesda had ever produced. And, it's funny. You just tell that, you know, Disney just came in with this heavy, if you look at the booklet that came with the game, like, maybe 60% of the booklet is just lists of Disney employees that really didn't work on the game or have anything to do with the game.
That's a classic kind of problem where you get somebody veneering a game that has nothing to do with what, you know, would it have been a good game as Sea Dogs 2? Probably, mm-hmm. You know, because people would have known what to expect from it. 'Cause if they'd played Sea Dogs 1 and liked it, and clearly enough people like Sea Dogs 1 that bought it that there was going to be a Sea Dogs 2.
Sure. You know?
Well, and I also don't understand, like here's a bizarre reference, and I know neither one of you have ever played this, and I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that I have, although I didn't buy it. You know the trauma, those great trauma center games that the Japanese have? Have you ever played those?
We're sort of drifting into Shella's area a little bit. Shella, did you play any trauma games when you were in Japan?
Okay, well, it's like a long-running series of these Japanese games where, like, you know, you're trying to solve these medical crises and whatever.
Oh, I know the sort of thing, yeah.
Okay.
Where you're like a surgeon and stuff
right.
like that. Yeah.
Right. Well, they're kind of fun. I mean, they get a little gross, actually, sometimes. But they're fun, you know, and there's like all sorts of dramatic music. Well, somebody, I guess, came up with the idea of doing a Grey's Anatomy game. So you would think, okay, Grey's Anatomy, that's doctors, right? So yeah. It should be something like Trauma Center. But mm-hmm. It wasn't even remotely like Trauma Center. And I was like, why would you just take this show that's clearly popular? It's, you know, been around for what, a decade or something, and bother making a video game for it if you weren't going to invest anything in it. That's what I don't understand. It's like, yeah. Why would you take a hot property?
Yeah, and actually tarnish it with this.
Exactly. You're tarnishing it. It's kind of like the game tarnished E.T. It's like you had this amazing thing, and it just left people with such a bad taste in their mouth. Now, yeah. Fortunately, I don't think but maybe 10 people played the Grey's Anatomy game, because I think the type of person who watches Grey's Anatomy in general, although I watch the show, in general is not a big video gamer.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you even bother spending the money to make that effort if you aren't going to make it anything?
What the trouble is that they don't have any love for the project. It's just, you know, when a team of people make a game that's not tied into any hot property, they're doing it because they want to do it. When it's tied to something, they're doing it for the money to make a bit of extra money. And so there's no love there. And so there's like this disconnect in the creative process where they're just like, we'll just use this as a framework and slap our thing on it and it'll work out.
I think that's an excellent point. I think that, you know, when you're creating a game, especially if it's a new IP, you know, the developing team, I mean, they're the biggest evangelists. They're like, oh, this is going to be so cool. And let's really work on this world. And when you're working for, you know, for Disney or whoever, and they're like, just make this game, then you're kind of thinking, oh, you know, what's the minimum that I can do to get my giant paycheck and move on to the project that
I
really care about?
Yeah, because I have no real control over this. They're telling me it's got to do this, this, and this. And, you know, I've got all these heavy-handed people on my back. So, yeah.
Well, it really is. It's a tragedy when you let something like... Because, like, for instance, that Harry Potter game that was good. I mean, clearly whoever developed that had both an affinity for Harry Potter and knew what gamers like.
Yeah.
You know, the Lego people, when they do tie-ins, I mean...
I was going to bring up Lego.
Yeah, most of those,
Lego tie-ins.
Even the ones that are so-so, are better than most movie tie-ins. And, you know, they really have a feel for the original material so that the jokes are funny and the, you know, I don't know. I don't understand why it's hard in this industry to find geeks who love, you know, the original, you know, source material.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Lego titles are interesting because, like you say, there have been, I mean, the ones that are good are really, really good. And the ones that are bad are just, you know, kind of average.
Right.
You know, they don't really, there's none that are like
horrible,
terrible, right. Terrible. Yeah. So actually, you know, there's one that came out. There's one that came out just recently. It's actually based on the Lego movie. Mm-hmm. So I mean, perfect tie-in material. I don't know how well they do. We had to get somebody to review that one. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. So yeah, I mean, there aren't. I mean, I don't know. My problem with finding games that I hate that were terrible is that. And I wish Greg Crow was on the show today because he and I go. About this all the time. I generally tend to like things that other people don't like for some reason.
Oh, you mean like Yakuza 3?
Like Yakuza 3, for example, yes.
Oh my god, how many orphans can I deal with?
A lot of people would put Yakuza 3 on the list of terrible games. I would put it on the list of really good games. I liked Yakuza 3. Yeah, it was kind of stupid that every 10 feet... somebody decides to want to fight you in the market.
Yes, and when you're not fighting in the market, you're trying to settle petty disputes between small children.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't really know what you found appealing about that. And I played it for way longer than I would have played it just looking for what it was that you liked about it.
That's hilarious.
It was an open world, and I liked – I don't know. I liked
how
being,
open
I
did
liked...
it feel to you when you have to have a fist fight with a street thug every 10 feet?
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of ridiculous that, like, I don't know, maybe Japan street thugs have a different mentality. Here in the States, street thugs see somebody who's obviously the toughest freaking guy. You know, he's covered in Yakuza tattoos, and he's, you know, 6 foot something, and he's full of muscles, and he just looks like he could crush your windpipe with two fingers, you know, and that's not the guy that you go up to and go, hey, I'm gonna fight you. Not in this country, you know. But in Japan, apparently the tougher you look, the more people want to fight you. So I didn't quite get that. You know, that guy would be safe on any street in New York City, like at any time of night. But apparently that makes him a target in Japan. So that was kind of weird. But no, I like the orphan angle. I like the fact that you were a good guy who was trying to like make the world a better place. And I don't know. It's just something about it spoke to me. I don't know why. But yeah, I have trouble. I had a point at some point. I generally tend to like games that other people don't. So my list would be kind of messed up. For example, like even with movies, like I like the Lost in Space movie. I thought was really good. And again, there's one that people would say was probably one of the worst movies ever made, but I kind of liked it. So I don't know. Maybe I just have bad taste.
No comment there.
I'm just gonna let this
we
go.
Were stunned.
I don't. So okay. Well, Shella, I'm so. What game is there a game specifically that you want to bring up that you mentioned a lot of good ones?
Yeah,
there must be a bad one.
I had to rack my brain really because I didn't play some of these really old. Because I didn't have game systems when I was a kid because they were too expensive. So I haven't played lots of these ones, like the Superman 64 game with the notorious fly through the rings level and things like that. So I had a look through my reviews because I couldn't, for the, I know that I have given things bad reviews, like 2 stars.
I know too, yeah.
And sometimes I quite like having, you know, going to town on a game that was just so terrible, but I couldn't remember for the life of me what they were. So I had a look through and I've discovered that I've played more Shrek tie-in games than anyone really should. It's just like, I was like, oh my God, I think I've played 3 Shrek games and I didn't even like Shrek.
Well, that's an odd distinction.
Were the Shrek games, were they like adventure games or side scrollers or I don't even remember the Shrek games.
I don't think I've ever played a single. Well, probably because Chella's been hogging all the reviews.
I know. Rub it in. Okay, you've never played one. Lucky you. Well, I played one on GBA.
Okay.
I played one. What was the other one on GameCube? And yeah, it was called Shrek Extra Large and it had fart and belch pouches, powers, and really bad controls. It was just a frustrating experience. I think I gave it 2.5 stars. Because they do look nice. The Shrek games always looked quite nice. They had, you know, the fairy tales parchment scrolls on the screens and, you know, all the little touches that you'd expect from the movies, but they were just so bad and annoying and frustrating. And I can't believe I played that many, John. And then I'm still here.
three Shrek games. I think that deserves a medal or something. That's pretty crazy.
I like Shrek. I mean, the first movie was okay, but it really needed to go away after the first one, but it didn't. Are they still making Shrek movies?
I think so. I mean, that's an example of like a movie tie-in. Well, yeah, and then Shrek's had spin-offs too, like the whole Puss in Boots thing, which actually
I just can't remember that.
I was just about to say, I like the Puss in Boots movie, but given what I just said a few minutes ago, maybe that's not
great. And the whole sort of manufactured soundtrack, you know, from popular beat combos of the time, you know, just and the whole thing from start to finish annoyed me. And I played 3 of the games, John.
Well, very good.
Without complaint, because I'd forgotten.
I can almost guarantee that you won't have to play another one. I don't think they're making them anymore. Maybe Shrek on Ice or something.
The video game. That'd be awesome. I want to review that one.
All right.
I'm not going to fight you.
You'll have to wrestle Shella for it.
No, you won't.
So, all right. Well, fun show today, guys. I appreciate it. And, you know, based on some really cool news about E.T., you know, the urban legend, I'm still shocked that an actual urban legend turned out to be true. I mean, how cool is that? And of course it has to do with video games. So there we go. So next we're going to find out that Last Starfighter, if you win the video game, it does take you into space.
You actually get recruited.
Oh, how cool would that be? Anyway, it's so funny. There's a game at this local arcade. Well, you know, arcades aren't really arcades anymore, but there's a place called Dave and Buster's, which is kind of like an arcade for adults. And there's this module off to the side where you can have 6 people play a Starfighter, a Last Starfighter-like game, where you're all sitting there and you all have a turret and stuff like that. And I've never seen anybody actually win the game, but my guess is if anyone ever does, that the entire pod actually disconnects from the rest of the building and flies That's off. Good. But anyway. It's just a working theory I have. So, all right. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me today. This is a lot of fun. Always good to talk about the bad games out there. And, you know, interesting. We actually ended up talking about as many good games.
More good games, in fact.
So thank God there's probably more good games than that.
Yeah, the good games are more memorable than the bad games.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, guys, all our listeners out there, let us know what you think. Maybe you've played some horrible games, or maybe some of the games that we said were good were actually horrible. That could possibly happen, especially in my case, I guess. Let us know. We are on Twitter as Gin Lounge. We're at Facebook. We're on Pinterest and Google Plus. I was not going to forget Google Plus, Shell. Thank you very much. So you check us out all those places. And of course, we're always at GameIndustry.com, right here waiting for you. Marie, Shella, thank you so much. Life is too short to dwell too much on bad games. So we're going to end the show. Out with the bad, in with the good. And we'll see you all next time right here at GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge. Take care, everybody.